What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
This episode is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. At Navy Federal, it's been the mission to help the military community for over 90 years. And not just help them, but do everything to make sure they not only grow, but flourish. That's why Navy Federal Credit Union has all kinds of great savings and investment options, like share certificates with sky-high rates. So don't hesitate. Start growing your finances today with a variety of savings and investment options. Navy Federal Credit Union. Our members are the mission. Savings products insured by NCUA. Investment products are not insured, not obligations of Navy Federal and may lose value.
Welcome to Strictly Business, Variety's weekly podcast featuring conversations with industry leaders about the business of media and entertainment. I'm Cynthia Littleton, co-editor-in-chief of Variety. Today my guest is Paul Lee, CEO of production company WIP. Lee is among the more successful of the high-level network and studio alums who have moved into production ventures after their corporate tenures ended in recent years. Lee rose over 12 years at Disney to become president of ABC Family and then head of ABC Entertainment and its studio. Lee has kept a low profile since he launched WIP in 2016. The company has evolved into a collection of producers and writers doing high-pedigree boutique projects. The roster reflects the class and mass style that he established at ABC with hits such as Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder, Blackish, and Fresh Off the Boat. In its short life, WIP has scored with HBO's Mayor of Easttown, Amazon Prime Video's The Summer I Turned Pretty, Apple TV Plus's Dickinson, FX's Pistol, HBO's White House Plumbers, with more to come. The company really reflects the shifting sands for TV in its roots and its present ownership. It was incubated at CAA, and now it's majority owned by the South Korean conglomerate JTBC Studios. Lee knows how to think about scaling shows and concepts from his time climbing the ranks at Disney. He also knows startups. The native Brit came to the U.S. through the launch of the BBC America cable channel in the late 1990s. And in his earliest days, Lee did production of all kinds for the BBC in news, factual, and documentaries. So now he's bringing that all together in a company that comes by its global perspective honestly. Lee is proud to tell me on the day of this interview that the company's BBC Two hit Toast of Tinseltown, from writer Matt Berry, has just won Switzerland's Rose d'Or Prize for comedy. In our conversation, Lee describes how he's drawing on his varied experience to build WIP into a going concern that has real library value for its owners. And after riding the streaming wave for the past few years, he has good insights into the pressure points in the system that have exploded into the writer's strike. That's all coming up after the break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, And of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay, so you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
We're back with a deep dive into selling TV shows with Paul Lee, CEO of WIP. Paul Lee, CEO of WIP, thank you so much for inviting me over to your beautiful offices here off Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood.
Well, thank you for coming along. We're excited to have you here.
After your tenure at ABC was over, what was it about the opportunity to build what has become WIP? What was it that appealed to you? Because I know You had many routes that you could have gone. Why did you go with WIP?
Well, it's hard to underestimate how exhilarating it was to be out of corporate life, I have to say. I mean, I had done a startup. BBC America was, of course, a startup within.
Oh, right.
Backed by Discovery and by the BBC. And I'd loved doing it. In my 20s, I was a producer-director, which is obviously, by definition, extremely entrepreneurial. But we had had a great run at Disney, super proud of the things that we did at ABC Family and at ABC, had a great team around, but it was time, and I relished the freedom and the anonymity. And this new revolution was starting. This revolution, as you pointed out, had been around long enough to see a number of them, was clearly more disruptive, more different, in many ways more creative, and definitely more global than the broadcast revolutions, or beyond them, the cable, and then the digital cable revolution that we brought BBC America in on. So it felt like this was a great position to be outside of the big corporate structures in this nice big area office, but still playing in a world where all the rules were going to change.
Was there something about the CAA at that moment? Were they in an entrepreneurial mode? Were they trying to seed that? Was there something that specific that brought you to CAA, or was that just the offer that spoke to you?
Well, what I loved about their approach, and I was already obviously close to Richard and Brian and Kevin, was that they wanted to make something that was extraordinary. They wanted to make shows that they and all their talent could be proud of. And they wanted to create something, which I think very relevant to the world we're in now, that was above all else, a champion for talent, for writers, for directors, for actors, a place where we could find their passions, we could invest in them, we could give them the freedom to do what they wanted, we could sell anywhere we wanted to sell, anywhere they wanted to sell, and then protect them as we went into production. And for me, that's what had driven our successes at ABC Family and ABC. And the notion, and of course I, in my 20s, was a writer and a director and a producer. So that notion of creating brand-defining shows for the new platforms, that's something I shared very much with Brian and Richard and Kevin. And we had a lot of fun doing it together.
Mm-hmm. Did you, going into it, coming from Disney, which has mastered the idea of the flywheel and the franchise building, you must have gone in eyes open that you were going into a world of selling shows where the buyers want everything to be siloed and they want every stitch of rights as you walk in the door. How did you navigate that?
Well, listen, I, as you pointed out, have been on platforms for long enough to know certain obvious rhythms. One of them is that certainly during downtimes, and different platforms do this at different times, the strat planners will always come in and they'll always say three things. They've certainly said it to me a few times over the decades. First of all, why don't you just make the hits? Secondly, we need to cut budgets. And thirdly, we need to buy entirely from our own teams, right? But when you do that, what happens over time, and I've watched this again and again and again, is that platforms can be successful in the short term, but in the long term, they stagnate. And that the best solution for any platform, be it the old broadcast platforms or the new streaming platforms, is to have a mixed economy. And by that, I mean, mm-hmm. we would never have got to Black-ish if we hadn't had Modern Family that had come out of 20th, brought in an audience, right. Brought in a creativity. What happens if you just buy from your own walled garden is that the ideas start to stagnate and you're always limited to the briefs and to the people and to the tastes of a limited group of people. And I watched this happen again and again and again. When the BBC brought in 25% of independents, this was back in the 80s, there was a huge wave of creativity that came off the back of that helped BBC's proprietary studio, right? You could argue the FinCEN rules did the same thing. You could argue that, you know, the independent movies of the 60s mm-hmm. did the same. They cross-pollinate and they bring mm-hmm. things in. So what we knew was, particularly since there are many, many buyers, that at any given moment, a number of those buyers would be looking to see great ideas coming in from the outside. And that if what we did is create terrific scripts, terrific projects, terrific ideas, and brought in the best talent, then we could always enrich. We would never be the number one favorite studio of a given streamer, but we could pitch to be the number two or three favorite studios. And that's a great position to be.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to get some sense on the strategy of that, like how you package and how you go out to pitch.
Well, we always drive it from our own passion. I believe that if you sit down and try to figure out exactly what all the buyers want, you're going to be late to the party, because what you're always doing is figuring out what they wanted when you started putting that together, right? And, you know, I don't do their jobs. It's an extremely hard job. I did do it, and I don't pretend to tell them how to do it, because they have all sorts of pressures and all sorts of information that others outside don't have. But I think that when a script catches you in your gut, as opposed to what are the briefs that have been decided corporately that might be wanted, if you're a buyer, if something really touches you in your gut, it resonates and it feels relevant and emotionally resonant, you should buy that show. Because the world will change so dramatically from now to when you pick it up, and from when you pick it up to when it goes out seasons 2 and 3. And often the things that resonate most are not the things we're thinking about at the moment. Not everybody was talking about AI 2 years ago.
Right.
So I think the key is an emotional connection with a subject, not necessarily the idea or the genre or even the package. That's the first one. The second key is to make sure that the writer and director are extraordinary and are bringing their A game and are bringing their passion to that project. So you've got to look them in the eye and say, is this the one you really want to do? And if it is, you have a chance of a hit.
Do you find that people, when you, especially in this role, being a newer company on the scene and people knowing that you're not, you know, you're not going into a big studio with a lot of, do you find that people are very focused on single ideas, or do people come in and you talk through a bunch of ideas and come to it together and come to like, hey, let's really focus on this one thing? I'm just curious how
in terms of the writers who come to us,
in terms
or
of the
directors,
writers, that very earliest gestation of somebody comes in to pitch you, do you find that people really pitch you specific things, or do they come in and say, I'm interested in these worlds?
I think it's a combination. The reality though is that when I was at a big corporate structure, the job was to create a network and a brand that flowed from your particular brief and taste buds and passions and what your audience wanted. We are selling to 9, as you say, maybe 20 different buyers, certainly around the world, many more. And so we've structured the company accordingly. We have a number of creatives, 4 or 5 creatives, that we believe are extremely good at their job, and we trust them to run their own businesses, to be in business with the people that they want to be, to invest in the shows that they believe in. We give them information, we give them support, we give them business affairs support, production support. But what that allows us to do is very much the structure of New Line back in the 90s and 2000s. It allows us to have all sorts of different taste buds, and they have different ways of approaching a different talent that they are in business with and that they are close to. But the direct answer to your question is both. Mm-hmm. People will come in with a slew of ideas and will want direction as to where to go. And others will be like, this is what I want to do. I'm going to make this.
This is what I've been. And, yeah. And do you, is it like something that you sense? Is it a gut thing? Or does it really that you know, like, oh, this person has passion for this? Or does it like you really have to see it on the page?
Oh, I think you can tell someone's passion when they walk in the door. And it is not true of everybody who runs, who is a buyer. But we were figuring out the other day, I never had a hit that I wasn't passionate about. Mm-hmm. There are some buyers who rather geniusly would only have hits that they hated. And they will remain unnamed, but you can probably guess who they were. But from my personal experience, if you love a project, and if somebody walks in the room with a real twinkle in their eyes, you got a chance there. Something special.
Don't pick up another script. Hang tight, and we'll be right back with more from Paul Lee, CEO of WIP.
Picasso knows your vacation home is your best home. It's the place that brings family and friends together. It's where you're the best version of yourself. Picasso makes it easy to co-own a luxury vacation home in amazing locations. Listings start at $200,000 for 1/8 ownership. Picasso does the hard parts for you. Luxury furnishings, maintenance, billings, scheduling, and more. With a home management team that provides support before, during, and after your stay. So you can focus on the relaxing, hosting, and making memories with family and friends. And you can resell on Picasso's marketplace anytime, historically for a 10% gain. With Picasso, you can stop saying someday and start building family traditions today in a vacation home you own and revisit time after time. Visit Picasso.com today to see thousands of luxury vacation home listings. That's PACASO.com.
Today, more than ever, we're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. And who has the time? HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your family's insurance and reviews your medical claims as they come in from your healthcare providers. Then, HealthLock's technology flags and alerts you to any errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud to help you and your family save. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. To date, HealthLock has helped its members save more than $130 million. Saving on medical bills starts with knowing where to look. HealthLock makes it easy to find and fix hidden medical bill errors. To save, visit HealthLock.com. Do it today before you see another healthcare provider.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
And we're back with more insights on selling TV shows from Paul Lee, CEO of WIP.
In this environment, how do you turn the passion, the quality, the amazing partners, how do you turn that into a business?
Well, what defines and what will always define these streamers is individual great shows, right? This is how this industry has worked for 70, maybe 100 years. And there's going to be an unholy fight between the streamers as to who will succeed and who will fight. We're in the middle of that fight, and it will take as long as it takes, maybe 3 to 5 years. The best ammunition, the best tool any platform can have in that flight, in that fight, is individual and brilliant shows. If you have, you know, Mayor of Easttown in your arsenal, or if you have Succession in your arsenal, if you have Summer I Turned Pretty in your arsenal, or Diplomat in your arsenal, that is going to drive subscribers, it's going to drive audiences, it's going to drive growth, and it's going to drive profits. So the best business model for us is to have the shows that people watch. And the audiences can smell the shows that are cynical, They can smell the shows that are trying to give them lessons, and then they can smell the storytelling that resonates and that is original and brilliant. And those are the ones that define these platforms and always have.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you to drill down a little bit on the business sense, not the dollars and cents, but just on the business sense? Are you able to structure deals with a Netflix or an Apple TV Plus or an Amazon, places where you've done business? Are you able to structure deals where you ultimately own the copyrights, you can contain the license term? I mean, there's definitely, you know, there's definitely, especially at this moment in the creative community, there's a lot of discussion and sort of dissection of how the business is changing. And I think we're in this moment, and there is obviously a writer strike. There's probably pickets not too far down the road here from where we sit at Netflix. But there's a sense of, like, I think what happened is streaming was new and everybody was excited. And of course, it injected a ton of money and energy and no rules. But I think what happened is sometime after the pandemic started to ease, people looked around and go, wait, this is the norm and the old rules are the exception. Can you make the economics work and make making content a profitable business for WIP?
The answer is yes. If we have a show that is competitive, then obviously we're going to end up with a better deal.
Right.
We have plenty of shows that we've done that we do have copyright on. And the answer is also that I believe it will also get stronger, because you're already starting to see, outside of the strike, you're starting to see a much more complex environment, an environment where the buyers will buy just for one market or two markets. There'll be more and more complex windows beyond that. There already are a number of broadcasters around the world, and a number of our shows are now becoming available to sell to those broadcasters. I think we're going to be in a world that is not nearly as uniform, And will allow us and others to be able to take the copyrights that we have and make sure that we build value over that for ourselves and for the talent that's there. The other thing that I would say that is related to the strike is that I think this is the moment, in answer to your question about, okay, let's sit down and look at the future, To take stock about what the streaming world looks and feels like, to do so in a way that we can be in relations to our streaming partners and our talent that can sustain and pay. But I think the most important thing is that streamers and talent and studios sit down and figure out a mechanism whereby we can share in the success that we all build together. That's how Hollywood has been so strong for the last 70 years. And if we could do that in a way that all parties will benefit, then it will bring a huge amount of storytelling strength for the next few decades to come. One thing, though, has changed and will not will not go back, and I think it's a great thing, but I speak as a Brit, which is storytelling has now become global.
Yes, that is definitely.
I remember the time when we were trying to do a follow-up to Downton Abbey on ABC. It wasn't a very real thought, but there wasn't a person in the world thought that could work. Right? Downton Abbey, one of the most watchable ABC-like, ABC-branded shows you could imagine. Mm-hmm. Now you can have a specific, brilliant, low-budget hit out of Israel or Colombia,
right,
or a big-budget hit out of London, right, or Seoul, that are being watched by the whole world. So I think that isn't going to change. In fact, I would suggest that's probably going to move. I suggest that's probably going to grow stronger as we go forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that has been the. I didn't appreciate in 2016 when Netflix flipped the switch at CES, when they flipped the switch on all those countries. It took me a while to appreciate the significance of just blowing through those borders, that the business had really been, it seems quaint now, few years later, but it does, like, the business was so geographically specific. As the streaming and the on-demand business has grown and the appetite for much shorter episode orders, is that evoked to you the British system, and was that something that you kind of recognized as, oh, this is a model I can work with?
I think absolutely. I mean, the British system was always limited series, seasons, sometimes one, two, but probably not more than that. Usually the director was the lead on a given shoot.
That's been such a huge sea change as well.
But great writers in England, you know, during my professional life, and in America now, and this will always be the case, are what drive the original voice. And unless you have Troy Kennedy Martin, you're not going to have Edge of Darkness, however great my friend the director is. So, and even though the structure is different, and even though the streamers are not looking for long-running series, although I will say, The Crown has run a long time, and you may find that particular model changes as series begin to drive the streamers' businesses around the world. It is still the case that the talent that creates the show is driving tremendous profits, and we have to figure out a mechanism that we could share that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mare of Easttown, which was such a big hit, went all the way, won Emmys, Kate Winslet, Jean Smart. I mean, you could not have packed more. And it was also so, it had the engine of a mystery, but it was truly emotional and moving and touching. It wasn't like, oh, here's the killer in the closet. It was a woman coming to grips with, you know, it was just really, I won't blow it for listeners, but that last, the closing moments of that scene, of that show, the closing moments of that series have really stayed with me. And of course, I'm going to ask you if there's a chance we'll see more Mare, but what was it like for you as a producer to get to that height, like, to, you know, peak Emmys, HBO, everybody's talking about it? That must have been pretty cool.
It was terrific. And don't forget, it was kind of during lockdown. The person who gets the credit for it is Mark Roybal on our team, because he's the one who put it together and built it. But it was terrific and extremely exciting, and it was such a credit to Brad Inglesby, mm-hmm, who wrote this script, mm-hmm, and to Kate Winslet, who performed it, that she was able to, in your words, to transcend the genre and to create something that really had emotional resonance with all of us and was done on so many levels. So we were immensely proud of it and super happy to have it as a calling card for our future.
Obviously yourself and, you know, your partners were significant, but there's probably nothing like, hey, we're the company that made Mare of Easttown, to just spur activity and get people interested.
Absolutely. I mean, Dickinson had put us on the map, mm-hmm, in terms of critical acclaim, but it was Mare of Easttown in terms of global success, and we suddenly had talent, writers, directors, actors around the world going, all right, I could do business with these guys. They know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. They-
we were very proud of it. I mean, you know, you have failures for every hit that you do. I can't remember any of the failures from my time at ABC or ABC Family. But when things come together, and it's not just that the writers and directors and the script, but the time is right, The world wanted to watch that show when it came out. And because we'd all been through 18 months of lockdown, and we put our feet up and we put ourselves into the hands of Brad and Kate.
About the writer's strike, don't want to belabor it. I know that it's a larger topic, but how for you, you know, still in Whip's young life, has this kind of, you know, shuttering of activity, is this a struggle for you in terms of financially with shows shutting down? How are you navigating this strike?
Well, we're very lucky to have great owners. JTBC and in South Korea are our owners, along with Atwater and CAA to a lesser extent. And so, you know, we feel very blessed to have the support that we have going through that. It is obviously frustrating and disruptive for everybody. I mean, that's the purpose of a strike. But I do hope, and I'll repeat this, I do hope that we can figure out a way where both streamers and talent sit down together and figure out a mechanism whereby they can really share in the success that they create together. And I think I feel optimistic over time that it's a strategically right moment to, as you say, figure out how we're all going to work together in a streaming world.
Is it in the Whip business model to, would you do a, if NBC or CBS or ABC wanted you to do a, you know, a comedy that could potentially be a 22 episode a year, would that work for you?
We would absolutely do that. We're at the moment pitching, I'm not sure I'm allowed to say what it is, a reality format show. And so we've been to ABC and NBC and we're about to go to Fox. We're very excited about that show. So no, absolutely we'd be in business with the broadcasters. They have different needs and different financial parameters. I think many of the scripted limited series or short run series that we do are probably better suited to the streamers. But yeah, we hope to get a pickup on this reality show that we're out with at the moment.
We'll stay tuned on that. Is there, obviously, you know, we just come through Q1 earnings season and every CEO has been preaching the gospel of cost cutting and cost containment. Are you feeling any tightening in the marketplace?
There's no question that I think we all felt tightening probably around last summer. Yeah. And it was sort of the moment where the streaming revolution went from a land grab to a this land needs to be fertile, right? We need to grow crops on this land.
Well put.
And so we certainly saw that, and we sold a lot of stuff into development, but we saw a redirecting within many of the major companies. What we're seeing now, actually, were it not for the strike, is many of those companies now having slightly pivoted, figured out where they're going. We've seen a lot of activity and momentum and a lot of interest in the buyers. So we're optimistic that when the strike ends, that there'll be a fair amount of optimism, not just to fill the shelves, which have different shapes and different dynamics from the shelves of the broadcasters of old, but they will not only need to fill the shelves, but they will be ready to buy and create global storytelling. And that's what we do for a living.
Of course, I know, you know, a truly producing for global audience is a focus. You've had a show that's gotten a lot of attention in the UK and other markets, The Toast of Tinseltown.
Yeah, we are super proud of that show. This is done by David Flynn, who looks after our international stuff. We did it in conjunction with the BBC. It has Matt Berry. I'm proud to say we just won the Rose Door for it.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And I think it's a measure of how independent studios like ours can take advantage of the fluid environment around the world to put together partners and create shows with local broadcast partners that we can then go on to sell to streamers and beyond. And it's a sign of how much the storytelling in the future is going to be global, and our ability to monetize that storytelling is going to get more and more complex and hopefully more and more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Wow, and I'm sure it's available on streamers here. Is it?
But it will be.
Let me close by asking you this. You've mentioned a couple of times, obviously, that you came up the ranks in the BBC as a producer and as a writer and a producer. What do you think in your early career, whether it be in your producing days or maybe other things, what are some of the experiences that you had early on that have really prepared you for this moment that you're in, for leading your own content company?
Well, One of the exciting things about what we're doing at the moment is we're in uncharted territory. It is so emotionally and intellectually exciting. It's a very strange thing to say during a strike, mm-hmm. but it is so exciting to be here. This is like being, you know, in motion pictures in the 20s or in broadcasters, you know, in the mm-hmm. 50s and 60s. Mm-hmm. It is an extremely challenging and exciting moment to be there. And to be able to create storytelling that can be watched around the world, and to be at a moment where the best storytelling is the one that rises to the top, and that the audiences, who always can smell cynicism mm-hmm. and genius mm-hmm. in different measure, will gravitate towards the genius. So we're in uncharted territory, and the uncharted nature of it is why we're having such fun. You know, we're able, in a small company, to sit down here, recruit the people that we love working with, work with the writers that we think are super talented and the directors, and not have to worry about the needs of a wider corporation. So all that is glorious. What I will say very specifically is, in my 20s, I was a producer, director, writer for BBC Two, and made a number of arts documentaries, a couple of scripted, a scripted feature, and a scripted hour. And so as we go through building this company, and I have done this throughout my career as an executive, and I do it now on this company, I always sit in the seat of the director and the writer as we go mm-hmm. into something. That's where
I
started.
You can't turn that off. Yeah.
You can't turn that off. You know what's driving them. You know when they feel insecure because you felt insecure, and you know when they know what they're doing is going to be great. And our job is just to back that. That was our job at ABC, and that's our job here.
That's great. Well, I think you just explained a big part of why WIP has been so successful. Paul, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to leave us a review at Apple Podcasts and Amazon Music. We love to hear from listeners. Please go to Variety.com and sign up for our free weekly Strictly Business newsletter. And don't forget to tune in next week for another episode of Strictly Business.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
If a new house is on your wish list in the next 5 years, grow your savings faster and experience your dreams with an Ohio Homebuyer Plus account from Kemba Financial Credit Union. A savings account specifically designed to save for a new home where you can earn 7% APY, a $500 matching bonus, and a $1,500 mortgage closing cost credit. Learn more at Kemba.org. Offer expires March 31st, 2025. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. NMLS 292230. Equal housing lender. Federally insured by NCUA.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.